Tonight we are down to verse number 15 in our slow scuttle through the book of Philemon. And, you know, I didn't write this book, and so as we talk about it, I have to take it verse by verse. And tonight is a verse that I think is, I would probably call it a little bit fundamental to what we're going to be talking about in the days ahead. But I think we have to take some time to get it and its meaning firmly fixed, and we won't conclude tonight. We'll just stop, and then next week we'll come back and deal with verse 16, but also pick up some of the thoughts that carry over in that from verse number 15. It's a very short verse. I came very close to putting together verse 15 and verse 16, and then thought better of that because we do need to build a little bit of foundation here from this verse. I remembered that I owe you 5 minutes from last week, so I thought I better not stretch myself into two verses. So let's just give some brief thought to Philemon chapter number, verse number 15. And I'm reading from the English Standard Version, which reads like this. For this perhaps is why he was parted from you for a while, that you might have him back forever. For this is perhaps why he was parted from you for a while, that you might have him back forever. I have a, one of my resource books is a 600-page commentary on the book of Marcus, of Philemon, written by a man named Marcus Barth, and some of his writing I have to read 5 or 6 times to even understand it, but he will frequently give a rather literal translation of the verses that he's treating, and this is the way he writes this particular verse in his translation of the Greek. Perhaps for this purpose he has been separated from you for an hour, that forever you hold him properly. Perhaps for this purpose he has been separated from you for an hour, that forever you hold him properly. It is a little bit ironic tonight, I think, that we arrive at a verse where Paul is, in my view, evidently approaching the point of exploring the issue of cause or reason or purpose of all that is happening in this triangular relationship between the apostle and the slave come Christian by the name of Onesimus and his Christian slave owner by the name of Philemon. Most of us, if not all of us, we look on still and ponder the horrible anguish of that massacre last Friday morning. And in one way or another, to one degree or another, we have likely all formed some type of a question or some type of an inquiry that begins with the word why. Or we have formed or expressed if it's not in the form of a question, we have been able to move beyond the why, and from our background and our experience and our wisdom, maybe we are one who has formed some kind of an explanation. And maybe our explanation begins with the sureness of, well, it happened because, and then others of us have arrived at a decision, and we have started by saying, well, perhaps the reason is. In any instance, it all is a response to that human penchant to know why and to have a rationale, an explanation of some sort for events that take place in our lives. My little grandson, who will soon be 4 years old, is in that stage. And to everything that confronts him in life, there is a huge why. Well, Mommy, why? Well, Grandpa, why? You can't give him any answer to any of his questions without him coming back with why. It's very human, isn't it, for us to ask the question why. It also, truthfully, can be very helpful and comforting and encouraging and stabilizing to ask that question why and subsequently move towards some definition to that hugely important question. Paul, before he wrote the letter to Philemon in Colossae, wrote another letter, separated by just a few years, evidently, to the believers that were found in Rome. And in an area of that letter that we identify as chapter 8, verse number 28, this is what he said, that for those who love God, all things work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. And that one excerpt from this letter to the Romans introduces to us the intriguing possibility of God's own involvement in the unfolding events pertaining to Onesimus and Philemon and their relationship one with another. Now, simply stated, and getting to a point that I think this verse makes right quickly, Paul moves into an arena in verse number 15 of potentially bringing out for us some divine meaning and some heavenly purpose to this whole scenario concerning a misplaced slave by the name of Onesimus. Verse 15, by most thoughts and by the organization of this book by many scholars, verse 15 opens a new section of this short book comprised of verses 15 through 20. And it launches the next line of thought as we slowly, very slowly, get to the points that Philemon, that Paul wants to make in this matter. And we do understand that he is discussing a unique issue between these individuals, but he is discussing an issue that is going to involve the world and believers right on down to the era in which you and I live. Now, tonight, I want us to just kind of lay a foundation as we move into this new section by looking at two verbs and two time frames that we find in this one verse. And I believe that they serve to open our understanding to this verse, and they introduce some very important elements, and then they also serve as a gateway to the verses as that follow. Some people say that the key verse to the book of Philemon is verse number 16. Well, this is the portal. This is the doorway to that verse. And so we'll just go that far tonight, lay out to what this verse seems to say, and then come back next week and pick it up again. We need this understanding, I think, as a prelude to digging into that next week. We might want to keep going or skim over this verse, but again, I think we will be helped if we just take this tonight. First, we're going to look at a Greek word that is pronounced something similar to horizo, that is frequently, in many translations, it is translated as to leave or to separate. It is especially focused on the thought of a local separation, meaning like you're here in Springfield and you leave. And you, as a result, are separated. It also can refer to the termination of a firm, tangible relationship, like the relationship between a husband and wife, like perhaps the relationship forced as it was between a slave and a slave owner. Many translations, and I try to consult many every week, but many translations use some form of the phrase was translated, was separated in describing this word and its usage in this verse. The New American Standard Bible says this, was for this reason separated. The ISB says was separated. And the American Standard Version says was therefore parted. And on and on and on. And many of them state this in a passive voice, although the King James Bible said that Onesimus departed Most of the other versions that I read say that he was separated, being a passive voice. And Greek scholars tend to tell us that this particular verb is used here in a form, in a voice, indicating that the subject, being Onesimus, is the one that is being acted upon. If I walk down here, which I would never do, I was going to say if I walk down here and slap so-and-so, but that's bad. I'm not going to do that. But if I walk down here and I shoved Anita for some reason, we would say Anita was shoved, right? She's the object of my action, and I am the one that pressed this action upon her of shoving her. Anita was shoved. And there are many scholars that I've read and many translations that read this that says that Onesimus was separated, introducing the idea that that separation was at least in part caused by or influenced by a force that was above and beyond Onesimus. And many of these scholars believe that this verse of Scripture contains an indication, if not a very strong conviction, of a divine involvement in the fact of Onesimus being separated from Philemon. An unseen action of God as an agent who was responsible for that fact of separation which was accomplished. And then you have Paul adding his mention of those two time frames, those two seasons of time. One of them is for a season, which Marcus Barth translates as for an hour, and the other one being forever, with the sense of permanence. And others say, well, the reason Paul puts that in there would be an indication that there was a purpose here. It had to be a divine purpose with a divine reason and a divine goal in mind. Now that brings us to the introduction into this verse of a very significant issue that we commonly would refer to as the providence of God. In Baker's Evangelical Dictionary of Biblical Theology, the writers define the providence of God this way. Providence is the sovereign, divine superintendence of all things, guiding them toward their divinely predetermined end in a way that is consistent with their created nature, all to the glory and the praise of God. Providence is the sovereign, divine superintendence of all things, guiding those things toward their divinely predetermined end in a way that is consistent with their created nature, all to the glory and the praise of God. I think most of you know a couple of events that have occurred in my family, in my life. First of all, my dad was stricken at a very young age, in his early 20s, with very severe spinal arthritis and lived out the remainder of his life severely stooped. I never one time had the joy of looking my dad square in the eye. I very early in life stood just about this much taller than he was. I have tremendous anticipation of seeing him tall and proud one day, but I never had that joy in this life. And then add to that complexity that started very early the fact that mom and dad's firstborn son, David, was born, fell ill at birth, and through a series of events wound up severely retarded, spent his entire life with the mind of a child. Went through a season of severe violence to the point that David finally had to be institutionalized for his own care and his own good and for the fact that mom and dad could no longer control him. And all of these things happened while my mom and dad were faithfully serving God. Every one of those years, my dad served as a deacon of the largest church in the largest AG church in the state of Arkansas. Now, I just have developed out of that and many other things, I've developed an incredible appreciation for hindsight. Because hindsight has allowed our family to see the positive impact of those two tragedies in our home and in our family. We look back at the fact we would never wish our dad to live the life that he lived and suffer the pain that he suffered and have to go through all that he went through with that horrible issue of severe arthritis. We would never put our home and our family through all of those sorrows, intentionally do it. But looking back upon it and seeing that they did transpire, hindsight has given us the capacity to look at them and find that, you know, there were some providential things in those hard points and those hard spots in the history of our family. Look what they produced in the testimony of our mom and dad. Look at the stability that they exhibited for us in spite of their hardships. It taught us, providentially, that we can go through anything. That there's nothing too hard for us as long as we keep our hands in the Lord's hands. The experiences of my brother, I could talk to you all night about the positive things that came out of a severely retarded little baby boy that lived to be over 50 years old and died with the mind of a child. I would look back to you and tell you that the experiences of David in our home, when he would hit at us, when he learned to curse at a young age, and how many of you know that's not a good thing coming from the home of a deacon in the church, but it did all the time, and the embarrassment of mom and dad, and all of those things. And yet, providentially, those things happened in a way that would create iron in the bones of my mom and dad and a solidarity in our family that we didn't necessarily appreciate at the time, but with the passing of time and the things that we would go through later, we all, every one of us would say, you know, it was just providence that we learned how to face the tough times and how to survive the tough times. Those things, every one of us could give testimonies tonight of the providential leadership of the Lord, of evidence coming to us many times by hindsight, doesn't it? Many times it comes to us by hindsight. Later on, we look back on it and we see the providence of God. I don't talk about this very often, but in our life of ministry, we can look back and find four, maybe five instances, specific instances, where at the very last minute, doors of ministry opportunity for us that we were absolutely convinced the Holy Spirit was guiding us through. He had opened them for us. He had made the way for us. It was His will. We had peace. We had no doubt. And four or five times in our life, in the very last moments, those doors would mysteriously close, and that opportunity we thought would be lost. And yet we look back upon that first one that occurred in the first months of our marriage, and I can't tell you how many times Deborah and I have said, you know, now, if that had happened, our life would be entirely different, and likely we would never have gotten back on the path that we have followed in missionary service to Africa. We've said that almost about every one of those. If that event had not happened, as hard as it was, I wouldn't vote for it. I wouldn't be in favor of it. But because it happened, we can now look back upon the finished fact and see the providence of God accomplishing His purpose for us. Providence of God. And this verse, the way it's written and the way it's put there is that Onesimus was separated. A sense that there was a force that caused that separation upon Onesimus, and it is evident that Paul is here hinting at. He doesn't come out and say, God told me. You know, we can do that so easy. God told me. Who can argue against those words? God told me. No, Paul wasn't going to say that. Paul just laid the option out there for both Onesimus and Philemon to chew on. Perhaps he was separated for this season. That's the second term I want to give you. It is a Greek word that I think is pronounced something like hora. It's a definite period of time. The American Standard Version translates it, the Authorized Standard Version rather, translates it with the word hour. 89 out of 103 times it's translated as hour. It's also translated by period, almost the word briefly. Here it's idiomatically used to signify a brief period or shortly or briefly. That's the second term. First of all is separated, removed, was separated is the voice that it's spoken in. The second word is this word which indicates a brief period of time, even used for the term hour. And then the third one is another word that I think is pronounced as best as I can, apeo, to have fully, or to have completely, or to hold. And Marcus Barth does indeed translate it as to hold. And then the fourth word is ionios, which is translated by many translations as forever. Now, the second term, hora, and the fourth term, ionios, they comprise what's in biblical literature referred to many times as contrasting pairs. And Paul has already used these pairs. In 8 and 9, he contrasted issuing an order with making an appeal. And in verse number 11, he contrasted Onesimus as being useful with Onesimus as being useless. And in verse 14, he talked about the decision being spontaneous, or the decision of Philemon being forced. And so he's got this contrasting issue going on in this particular verse of Scripture. And we have to get down to the point of asking ourselves, what is Paul trying to say? He sent Onesimus back to Philemon, or at least he urged him to go. Is he now saying that he is sending Onesimus back to Philemon, and it is to be a forever sentence? It's to be a permanent sentence? Is he saying that he is sending Onesimus back to continue as the slave of this slave owner by the name of Philemon? I don't think so. It appears to me that he is talking about a relationship that is built outside of the bonds of slavery. And we'll see this more clearly next week as we go into verse number 16. It is a relationship that will not be built upon control and force, which exemplifies the slave and the slave owner relationship. It will be a forever relationship that is much closer, much more personal, much more genuine, built upon the principles of brotherhood and faith. Paul talks about a lasting or a forever relationship, but we will see it is not indicated, in my view, that he is talking about returning to Philemon and fulfilling a life sentence as a slave. There are other options. There is a category of people in this era of time that are known as freed men. These are persons right above the level of a slave, and yet they are free. They were usually exemplified by poverty, but they were in the economic system, and they could pursue trying to get ahead. They could pursue trying to do better in their life, and it would not be culturally unusual or culturally out of order for Philemon to literally remain with, for Onesimus to literally remain with, let me get this straight. It would not be unusual for Onesimus to remain with Philemon no longer as a slave, but perhaps as a freedman serving as a paid servant. And it appears that this is the relationship that Paul is talking about. It may well be, he is writing, that this separation, that Onesimus was separated for a season in order that he could be held by Philemon properly forever. In other words, very idiomatically speaking, about a new relationship that will be much closer, much more permanent, built upon brotherhood and love rather than on coercion and force, and indicating that it would no longer be a relationship marked by slavery. That's one of the options. Now, there's another mixture we got to add here real quickly, and that's the mixture of what may appear to be a tension between verse 13 and this verse, verse 15. In 13, we hear Paul expressing his strong preference to keep Onesimus with him and to make use of him as his assistant in the ministry. He expresses that very clear. "My druthers," he said, "I'd druther keep him here and use him to help me in the ministry." In 15, he is suggesting that his return to Philemon might be, perhaps is, the result of God's own providential purpose and plan after all. What Paul seems willing to accept in comparing verse 13 and verse 15 is God's contradiction of his own personal ambitions and plans to keep Onesimus at his side. And he appears to yield to that providence of God with no difficulty at all, with an understanding that if he is going back to Philemon in the providence of God to be held properly forever, it will be good for Onesimus. So Paul is willing to at least appear corrected or maybe just confused by God's providential intent that does not jive with his own preference expressed in verse number 13. Paul talks about a different relationship in this issue than just a mere slave and owner because of a third party. He is introducing a third party into this issue, and it is God manifesting his providential involvement of directing all things and all happenings, whether they're good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant. God institutes his authority and his influence over all the affairs of men. And in this verse, different from other verses, Paul leaves himself totally out of the picture. In many other verses, Paul is that third party. He's the third voice we hear. But here he backs away and makes it an issue between Onesimus and Philemon and God. And the one thing that we see at this point is that God's providence is evident. It's evident in our lives. It's evident down through the course of history. It is evident in this passage of Scripture as being an influence that created the issue that we're facing in this verse. In this verse 15, we also see, however, the role of God's human partners in all that is unfolding. Under God's providence, Paul seems to be saying, Onesimus saw his relationship with Philemon disrupted by the very decisions that he made, but under the roof, if you please, of the providence of God. And Philemon hears Paul describing his role, Philemon's role, in the coming restoration of this relationship when Paul looks at him and says, "You, Philemon, will take a new tack and you will hold this man properly." That is an absolutely pregnant statement. He is saying to Philemon, "You're going to hold Onesimus not as a piece of chattel, not as a piece of personal property that you paid for and have an invoice that shows you paid for it. You're going to hold him as a human being of equal status with yourself. You're going to build a loving relationship with him. You're going to respect him. You're going to hold him close. You're going to build a relationship that will have value for you and for him, for the church that meets in your house, and it will also set a pattern that will serve the people of God and humanity down through the course of history." That's really what this verse 15 brings us to. By and large, the significance here is Paul says, evidently, there is a hand of God at work. Perhaps Onesimus was separated for a season in order that you can hold him properly. You can be reunited with him. You can build a new relation with him forever. So let's leave it there tonight and lay that as a foundation. And next week we'll come back and pick up this idea of Paul. It's an amazing thing for the man of God to admit that he is superseded. His ambitions and his purposes are superseded by the plan of God, isn't it? Aren't you glad for God's providence? He's so much smarter than we are. He's so much wiser than we are. And wisdom says, right now it's time to give you that 5 minutes. God bless you. We'll see you next Wednesday night.